Alrighty, baby, welcome to it. It's Tuesday. It's the 19th day of March, 2019. I'm Derek Hunter. This is the Daily Caller Podcast. Welcome to it. Lots of stuff to get to, tons of things to talk about, lots of audio to play, so many lives to dissect. 24 hours, and they just cram in so much BS. It's absolutely amazing how the left turns everything into a bull's colon. So much BS crammed in there. As I always say, and because I mean it, thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Please keep doing that. Thanks for rating and reviewing on iTunes. The numbers are going up every single day, and it's only because of you. So thank you for that. You can always email the program, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. You can tweet at me, at Derek A. Hunter. I don't check my mentions all that often because they're not always super friendly, and I just don't feel like getting into fights with people, but tag me on it. Share the show on there and tag me on it, and I'll definitely thank you for all of that. And email, good stuff, bad stuff, whatever you got. All right, where to start, where to begin? Let's talk about what is all the rage on the Democratic side again, and it's rage. It is every kind of rage. The New Zealand mosque terrorist attack. Not everybody's calling it a terrorist attack. It's really a semantics argument, but it's a terrorist attack in my mind. You can call it a massacre. You can call it the mosque shooting, what have you. It is getting crazier and crazier. There are more and more leftists blaming President Trump, blaming Donald Trump for everything under the sun. The sun went supernova. The last thought in the Democrats' heads would be, damn that Trump. He did this to us. And that would probably be a sweet, sweet relief compared to having to sit through this election with these people and trying to watch them pick a candidate. The craziness that goes on over there. So let's talk a little bit about the left's reaction to New Zealand and the concept of guns. We're also going to get into Elizabeth Warren going off in the CNN town hall about reparations. Yes, Pocahontas, Liawatha. She's just going to spend the rest of her life trying to make up for lying her whole life. She won't give back the millions that she made, but she'll try to make up for it by spending our money. But first, let's talk about guns. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is as good a place as any to start. She's announced for president. You wouldn't know it because nobody cares. She's wildly unpopular. And she's just not going to be the candidate. New York senator, just a kind of a phony. She's flip-flopped on just about anything and everything you got. When she ran for the Congress, for the House in a red district, she was very pro-Second Amendment. She was on the side of people who like the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Now that she's a New York senator statewide, she's not so much a fan of what she was a fan of not that long ago. And now that she's running for president, she really can't be. She has to not only outdo her radical leftness that got her elected to the Senate, she's got to do it in such a way and to such an extreme that it makes up for, or at least makes people look past, the way she used to be when she swore that she was pro-Second Amendment. So she is running around the country, as these candidates are doing, and I want to apologize on behalf of the rest of the country to the states of Iowa, New Hampshire, and to a lesser degree, South Carolina. You are going to be inundated with these people nonstop. Somebody sent me an email last week, I think, about Beto running around Iowa and whether or not Beto would be back. Here's a way. If you live in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, or one of these places where these Democrats are going to be running around, especially the more popular ones like Beto, and you're going to be disrupted if they're going to come in and ruin your breakfast, or you know where they're going to be, and they're kind of ruining your local news because they're dominating it, there's a way to make money at this. I'm always thinking of ways to try and make money at things. If I lived in Iowa and I knew that Beto was coming to town, I would buy 5 copies, maybe 10, that'd probably be pushing it, 5 copies of Vanity Fair with him on the cover. Hell, I don't even know if they're 10 copies of Vanity Fair in all of Iowa, because who the hell is going to read it? I would get them with him on the cover, and I'd ask him to sign it in a nice, solid blue or black or red Sharpie, whichever one would show up best on the cover. And then I would list those suckers on eBay so fast. And I suspect you could get at least $100 a piece for them. You could maybe get $200 to $300 a piece, and on a good day, you might be able to get $500 for it. Beto raised $6.1 million the first day after he announced for president. That beat Bernie, and Bernie's fans are nuts for Bernie. That tells you how crazy people are for Beto, the concept, because nobody knows what the hell he stands for, not even him yet. But he sure believes deeply in platitudes. So I would get him to sign it, and I would sell it. If Bernie's coming to town, pick up a copy of his book, used on Amazon. You can get him for a couple of bucks, usually. Ask him to sign it. Sell that sucker. I collect signed books. I have about 1,200 signed books, mostly biographies, but all kinds of books. And generally, the jewels in my collection are a couple of signed first editions of The Exorcist by William Peter Blatty, who was nice enough to invite me to his home to sign some. And I got to watch The Exorcist with him in a movie theater once and got him to sign one there, too. Christopher Hitchens, obviously, because he was a friend. Margaret Thatcher, who I was lucky enough to meet a couple of times when I worked at the Heritage Foundation. And a few other people like that. I have every president since, I don't think I have Nixon, but definitely since Ford, with the exception of Reagan and Obama. They're too damned expensive. When Obama's book comes out, I'll see if I can score one of those. But I collect them. But to finance my collection, because I'm not rich by any stretch of the imagination, I go to book signings, I go to events where somebody's going to be, and I bring a couple copies of their books. Or I'll buy a couple of copies of their books at a book signing, keep one for myself, and sell the others. Now, they have to be kind of famous people. But Bernie sells himself. I bought 3 copies of Bernie's books. They were 20 or 25 bucks a piece, and I immediately sold the 2 extra copies for $100 a piece on eBay. Why? Because I made $200, and it only cost, well, I made $175 if they were 25 bucks a piece. So it actually, I made a profit off of this. It's also a little bit joyous knowing that I made a profit off of Bernie Sanders. So if they're coming to your town and there is something iconic or sellable, not just an 8x10. Nobody's going to buy an 8x10 signed by Amy Klobuchar, for example. But Bernie Sanders' books, Beto O'Rourke, Kamala Harris's books, people would pay money for these things. You might as well make a little profit if you have to suffer seeing these people on your TV all the time. That being said, get back on track talking about Kirsten Gillibrand talking about guns. She wants to be president so bad, she's trying to out-wacko the rest of the field. She has to. Nobody knows who she is, and the people who do know don't care. So at an event yesterday, she went off under the guise of what happened in New Zealand, and this is amazing. Something happens on the other side of the planet, and Democrats are actually exploiting it to A, attack the president of the United States, and B, try to enact gun control laws here in this country. Honestly, it boggles the mind to think who this works on. Who sees something on the other side of the planet and goes, well, we must act. Of course, there have been 120 Christians since February murdered in Africa, but in Nigeria, but who cares? Why, we're not going to talk about that. That doesn't matter. Their houses were burned. They were slaughtered. Women and children dead. Who cares? Doesn't matter. Doesn't fit the liberal narrative. Might as well not have happened. The tragedy in New Zealand, that gets all the ink and gets bastardized by the left for their political purposes. Here's Kirsten Gillibrand talking about what we need to do and why we don't have even more gun laws in this country. Let me just say, I don't know that there's anything except for maybe radioactive material that is more heavily regulated by the government on how you can buy, sell, and use, governments at all level in this country, buy, sell, use, than firearms. the car is maybe a close second. Yet to listen to Gillibrand and listen to most of these Democrats talk, you would think you could just walk into a convenience store, buy a pack of Marlboro Reds, a six-pack of Bud, and a machine gun, and walk out in about as long as it took to get your stupid chip read by that new credit card machine. Nothing could be further from the truth. Yet to hear Kirsten Gillibrand tell it, that's essentially not only the way it is, it's the way the gun manufacturers want it.
Because the gun manufacturers only care about gun sales, they oppose the common sense reform that can save lives. They want to oppose universal background checks because they want to sell an assault rifle to a teenager in a Walmart, or to someone on the terror watch list, or to someone who's gravely mentally ill with a violent background, or to someone with a criminal conviction for a violent crime. They want to sell those weapons. That's why they oppose universal background checks.
All of those things she described are illegal and have been illegal for some time, but she thinks that gun manufacturers are just out there hanging out in Walmart parking lots, because that's where Kirsten Gillibrand thinks that the white trash congregate who just want to buy guns because they're violent people. And they just want, hey, guy yelling at a lamppost, if you've got $5, I'll give you a Thompson submachine gun. This is what they think of people who aren't them. This is why they're dangerous, because they want to legislate. Just like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, most of these Democrats, unlike AOC, these people tend to know that they're lying, but they tend to know that their audience, the Democratic primary voters, don't know that they're lying. They lap this stuff up. They buy into it hook, line, and sinker. Oh, baby, you mean these people? They're out there selling guns to crazy people. They just want kids to walk in, 12 years old, and buy an AK-47 off the rack. That's, of course, not the way the world works, but she doesn't care how the world works. If you happen to be a Second Amendment enthusiast, somebody who likes all of the amendments to the Constitution, who actually reveres the Constitution and has, dare I say, read the Constitution, the odds of you voting in a Democratic Party primary are pretty slim. So that frees up the Democrats incredibly to be able to just say anything, do anything they want, and get away with it. Because who's going to call them? The media sure as hell isn't going to call them out on it. And nobody in the room is going to call them out on it because they're too busy being scared to death by all the lies that the Democrats are spewing. You can't sell guns to somebody who's a convicted felon. You can't sell guns to somebody who has mental issues with a violent past. You can't sell guns to children. I mean, each one of those things are already illegal. It is a complete and total fabrication that she's spewing there, and the crowd sat around. They weren't quite snapping. I don't think that's yet hit Iowa, but they were on the verge of snapping their fingers, just like those activists did towards Chelsea Clinton yesterday to show their disgust at her existence. Yet this is what the Democratic Party platform is. Somebody did something awful, evil, on the other side of the planet. Therefore, you must have your rights curtailed. Even when it's in the United States, somebody did something awful, evil. Therefore, you must have your rights curtailed. And almost without fail or without exception, we come to find out that any and everything that they are proposing would not have come close to stopping what they say they're acting to stop. And they'll even admit it sometimes. Yes, well, this wouldn't have done much in this case because he killed his mother and stole her guns. But still, or yes, it wouldn't have mattered in this case. He did break the law already and the background check system failed. But still, we must do something more. If you notice the answer to a leftist when it comes to any problem, even problems government routinely addresses, their answer is always we need to do more. It's not just curtailing our rights, it is spending, education. Since the government got involved in education on a federal level, since the Jimmy Carter administration when he created the Department of Education, education results have steadily declined. We've spent more money than we ever have before every single year, and the results we get back are worse and worse. And what are the Democrats saying? We need to invest more in education. Then why was education so much better before the federal government was investing in it? Nobody wants to ask that question. Nobody ever says, hey, you know what? The federal government has too big of a role in education, and it's really screwing things up. Maybe we should pull back. Maybe we should just send a check with no strings attached and let the states figure out how to do it. Or better yet, just remove ourselves completely from it. Get the cold turkey, give them, you know, some methadone to get off the addiction of federal money and leave the states to their own devices the way things used to be when the education system worked. Nope. It's always forward. It's always, and forward is always, always more money. Don't worry about the results. More money, by the way, here are mandates on how you have to deal with sports, what kind of classes you must offer, so on and so forth. Because every dime from the federal government comes with regulation strings attached to it. Anyway, I'm straying. Kirsten Gillibrand was lying, and I rudely interrupted her by pointing out those lies. So I will end that and allow her to continue defecating all over the truth.
That's why they won't oppose something as simple as bump stocks or banning assault rifles or large magazines. They want to sell those things, no matter what, to anybody. And it's why they won't do common sense things like have an anti-trafficking law. I mean, honestly, in a state like New York, our number one problem is that guns used in crimes get trafficked from out of state right into the hands of gang members. And they will not even support an anti-federal gun trafficking law.
If you buy a gun in Virginia and drive it up to New York and give it to somebody, or buy a gun in Virginia or Pennsylvania on behalf of somebody in New York, you have committed a major felony and you will do serious jail time. There are straw purchase laws on the books. Maybe Kirsten Gillibrand doesn't know this, but what she's describing is already illegal. If you carry a gun legally in whatever state you happen to live in, and you visit the state of Maryland with your gun, and you have your permit, and you went through all the background checks, and you jumped through all the hoops, and you get caught with that gun just sitting in your trunk of your car, and you're pulled over, you will go to jail. Same for New York. There are plenty. If there's one thing not lacking when it comes to guns in this country, it is laws. There are laws against just about everything all over the country. They use the same argument in Chicago. Well, all these guns are brought in from outside of Chicago. Yeah, because you can't buy a gun in the city of Chicago. The city chased everybody out who sold guns legally. But yeah, but then they come in and they bring it in. The problem isn't that somebody's just bringing it. This is what drives me nuts about the left. They think that these places where these high murder rates happen and these horrible things wouldn't happen if it weren't for the inanimate object that is sitting out there. You know, Chicago, the south side of Chicago, was just a peaceful, quiet, small section of town. And then some evil person from out of state drove through and threw a gun out the window. And suddenly, everybody turned into the Walking Dead, and they had to eat the one person who was still alive. They had to get that gun and start shooting people. The problem isn't the inanimate object. A gun sitting on a table is a paperweight. A gun in the hands of an evil person becomes an incredible weapon of destruction. A gun in the hands of a good person trying to defend themselves becomes an incredible tool for personal safety. Because if somebody's breaking into your home, for example, and you call police, they maybe get there in 3 minutes. If it's a really good response time and you're not that far from the police station or there's somebody in a patrol car near your house at the moment you make the call. But it's more than likely going to take a little bit longer than that. Now, what happens in those ensuing minutes? How long do you think it would take for something awful to happen? How desperately would you want to have the means by which to protect yourself ready at hand? Of course you would. That's why law-abiding citizens, they always say, there are 300 million plus guns in this country. Yes, there are. And we're not all dead. That tells you something. That tells you that it's about the people, not the object. If the guns were this sort of siren song that called people to do things they otherwise wouldn't do, wouldn't there be a hell of a lot more with 300 million in this country? Brooke Baldwin, I have audio of her in a bit being an activist. She's allegedly a news anchor, a straight news anchor. She pointed out that 40,000 people died last year from guns. Yeah, more than two-thirds of them were from suicides. Most of the rest of them were straight-up murders, handguns. They never want to ban the handguns, although they'll get to them, but they want to get rid of the rifles first. But it's from handguns and crimes, gang-related crimes, gang-related violence. So they don't even tell you the whole story of the statistics that they throw around. They just want to scare you because they know that a scared person is more likely to acquiesce to their ridiculous demands. But the truth is their kryptonite. The gun is not the problem. It is the person holding the gun and using it for evil, evil means. How do you weed them out? I'm all ears, but it sure as hell isn't curtailing the rights of 99.9% of the population because 0.1% of the population is evil. Maybe we need to focus on parenting. Maybe we need to get back into the good parenting business. That would, by the way, also help in the education thing I was just talking about. They always say, well, we need to spend more money on education, more money on education. The wealthier school districts have better test results, and therefore money is what will solve that problem. It's not the money. It's more than likely the fact that the parents care compared to poor neighborhoods, no matter what the race, where parents are less likely to care, where the parents have been told and been sitting around, told that the government is going to look out for them. Don't look out for yourselves. Where the government provides the food for the kids. Don't make a lunch for your kids. Government will take care of it. Don't make breakfast for your kids. Government will take care of it. If you aren't willing to make breakfast for your kids, if you're not willing to buy a bag of oatmeal or some fruit or some eggs, or make a sandwich for your kid's lunch. If you're not willing to do that, you don't deserve your kid. That's just an aside. It drives me nuts. It's one of the easiest things to do. I make breakfast for my two-year-old every single day. Every day. No matter what it is. Even if it's just a bowl of Cheerios and I have to feed it to her because she'd make a mess. Or I make her eggs. Or whatever the case is. She has no doubt that I care. Parents who sit up, well, the school, just send them off to school and the school will feed them. You're a bad parent. You're a bad human being. And you need to stop doing it because your kid is getting the wrong message that the government takes care of them when it's your job. Oh, I know it's easier. Who wouldn't like to just sleep in, roll over, say, go get the bus, and roll back over and sleep till noon? Who wouldn't want to do that? There's more to parenting than just getting laid. Anyway, back to Kirsten Gillibrand. My God, has one person ever crammed so many lies into one? Maybe Bill Clinton in a State of the Union address or Barack Obama in a speech about health care. But Kirsten Gillibrand is doing gangbusters here. She isn't even done. That's how many lies she has. That's, by my count, we're up to like 8 lies and we're in less than a minute of audio. So here's like the last 20 seconds. See how many she can cram into this one.
So they are corrupt. This is the definition of corruption. It is the definition of greed. And they have a chokehold on Congress unlike anything I've ever seen. And so common sense members of Congress that you think would be for these things aren't because they're so afraid of the NRA.
This, by the way, is not the definition of corrupt. You would think somebody who went through the New York political machine would know the definition of corrupt. And in fact, she does know the definition of corrupt. She worked as Harvey Weinstein's personal attorney. So she definitely knows what the definition of corrupt is. She worked for as his attorney in the law firm that represented him and was good friends with him for the years that everybody was covering up for him. So and they were making settlements for him to keep people quiet. So she definitely, definitely knows what the definition of corruption is. Don't you, Kirsten? don't you, Senator Gillibrand? Why'd you remove all those pictures of you and good old Harvey from back in the day? You still cashed his checks, didn't you? Such hypocrisy. But you expect that from somebody running for president. You expect that from a politician. Generally, however, to hear them tell it anyway, we of course know better. When journalists talk about guns, they speak only as the voice of truth and reason. They are there to tell you the who, what, where, when, and why of a story, not to give their personal opinions. My, you could watch a good journalist on CNN or MSNBC and not have any clue what their political leanings might be. You'd come away scratching your head, going, I just don't know. Where do these people fall on the spectrum of politics? Not anyway. Brooke Baldwin is a serious journalist. Why do I know that? Because she tells us all the time. It's another giveaway. If you have to tell somebody you're a serious journalist, Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo, you're probably not. Just like if you have to tell somebody how smart you are or how funny you are, you definitely aren't. Real people who are smart, who are funny, who are good looking, who are anything. They don't have to go around telling everybody those things. We get it. We pick up on it. Yet the people at CNN continually tell us how they're serious journalists and Fox is fake news. Fox is state-run media. Jeff Zucker, who has to tell people that he's smart, that he's funny, and that he's good looking because he's none of those things, but he has hundreds of millions of dollars, so they all pretend that he is. So much so that Brian Stelter is doing an homage to Jeff Zucker and copying his look. It kind of looks like Mr. Potato Head with several pieces, including the hat and the hair, missing. Anyway, Brooke Baldwin, on her show, her straight news show, not one of CNN's opinion programs, using New Zealand, of course, not Nigeria, weird, but using New Zealand to lecture the United States for, quote, failure to do something about guns. Listen to this straight news anchor lecture her audience from, of course, an unbiased perspective.
But here's the thing. Did you notice how quickly New Zealand is taking action on guns? 72 hours after this attack, at least one gun shop owner is refusing to sell certain guns in the magazines that enable them to use more bullets. New Zealand's biggest online auction site has banned semi-automatics and associated accessories, saying that it is clear public sentiment has changed. That's a quote. My point is this. They have all come together to try and find a solution as fast as possible so this doesn't become routine. Routine? In America, it's just the opposite. Instead of coming together to come up with concrete solutions like this, each side runs back to its partisan corners. Sales of guns often go up after mass shootings. It is a crisis in America, no matter which side you are on.
Oh, New Zealand, they quickly snapped into action. So what? Big deal. Who cares? Australia banned guns and confiscated them. So should we do something? New Zealand wants to curtail the rights of the New Zealanders? I don't care. If the New Zealanders are willing to put up with it, that's their decision. It has no bearing on what goes on over here. We have the Second Amendment, which is pretty unambiguous unless you're deliberately obtuse, which most liberals are, quite frankly. But to hear her talk, why can't we all come together? Why? Because one side says everybody who did nothing has to be punished. They want to make sure that the perpetrators, you know, get three hots and a cot for the rest of their life. They want to find out what was the reason. Why did they do this? And maybe we can find some way to reach this person. Maybe they had a rough childhood. And some of these people would get out of prison. They want that while punishing the innocent. That is not what we're supposed to do in this country. The innocent are innocent. Hell, sometimes the guilty are declared innocent, too. OJ, anybody? But somehow Brooke Baldwin thinks it's wonderful that New Zealand came together and they're scrambling in a time of tragedy and panic. That is the exact wrong time to do anything legislatively at all. Patriot Act, anybody? When human beings act out of emotion, they act stupidly. That's just the way it is. If New Zealand wants to act quickly, they're free to do it. We do it in this country? No. Our founding fathers knew that about human nature. That's why they created a bicameral Congress, and the Senate, where it's supposed to slow down debate and make sure that what they're doing was the right thing to do. It doesn't matter to Brooke Baldwin. It doesn't matter what gets done. Something must get done. And of course, the something that gets done is always more curtailing of your rights. And again, I will not have my rights curtailed because some monster abused theirs. Nor should you, nor should anybody. Yet that is the progressive way. That's not actually the progressive way. They know for a fact that you did nothing and will do nothing. It's really dangerous that anybody in this country, let alone a so-called journalist, would advocate we must scramble to make sure that this doesn't happen again in New Zealand. Well, is there an epidemic of mass shootings in New Zealand that we're all unaware of? No, there isn't. So what you're dealing with is not an epidemic. It is an anomaly. You should never legislate from an anomaly, yet the Democratic Party does this all the time, too. As horrible as the mass shootings are in this country, and they are horrible, and so are the individual shootings, they are anomalies. They are committed by a very, very tiny, tiny fraction of the population. Now, why should everybody else be impacted, be punished for the actions of a tiny, tiny fraction? New Zealand wants to act quickly, knock yourselves out. Here in the United States, we don't offer collective guilt, or at least we used to not. Now that seems to be what the Democrats live on. But Brooke Baldwin wasn't done. See, she just started getting to a full gallop on her high horse.
Whether it is concert goers or high school students or worshipers or first graders, nearly 40,000 people in the United States died by guns in 2017. That is a record high, according to the CDC.
The vast majority of whom committed suicide. Yes, each suicide is awful and tragic as well. But why? People take handfuls of pills. Should we ban pills? People cut their wrists. Should we ban knives? Actually, don't say that too loud over there in the UK. They're probably trying to do that now because of all the stabbings they've had. If somebody's trying to kill themselves, they're going to kill themselves. If you dig deeper into those statistics, once you get past the suicides, then you deal with the drug and gang-related violence. Then you get down to the serious murders in this country, which are minimal. When you get down to the mass shootings and those that involve rifles, you get to a fraction of a fraction of a fraction, to the point that people killed by rifles in this country are outnumbered by people killed with hammers. I used to be a roofer. I can tell you hammers are incredibly dangerous. Do we need serious hammer control legislation? Because the AR-15 kills or is responsible used in the murders of fewer people than hammers or bricks. Do we need brick control in this country? It is weird to me that these liberals are desperately scrambling to try and ban the least used when it comes to murder, one of the least used types of firearms when it comes to murder. And then it occurs to me why. And this is, again, I'm going to lift from Adam Carolla. He made this up. He deserves all the credit for it, but it's absolutely true. What Second Amendment enthusiasts and constitutionalists understand is that once you allow the chipping away of your rights, you never get them back. You can't crazy glue those chunks that the left chipped away at your rights and put them back in place. Carolla talks about the smokers and uses it as an analogy for the Second Amendment. Smokers used to smoke everywhere. You could smoke in a restaurant, you smoke in a bar, you could smoke on a plane, whatever. And then one day the people said, well, you know what, in the restaurant, we're going to put you just in the smoking section. Go ahead and smoke. If you could just move over here to the smoking section, it'd be so much better. Everybody would have a great time. So smoker said, yeah, okay, let's go over there. Then after a little while, I said, you know what, if you could just move up to the bar, we're going to get rid of the smoking section, but you can smoke at the bar, don't worry about it, no big sweat. So the smoker said, yeah, sure, go up to the bar, and they're smoking and having their drinks, and then they come up and say, you know what, though, if you wouldn't mind, if you could just step outside, just right out front. There's an awning there. If it's raining, don't worry about it. We got you covered. It'd be so much nicer if you went out there. And they said, oh, yeah, sure. They grabbed their smokes. They went out front smoking. And then they come out and say, yeah, you know, if you could move like 20 feet away from the door, that would probably be just absolutely the best. And of course, now smokers find themselves having to be in a hermetically sealed Tupperware container in order to smoke when they're allowed to, provided they're allowed to buy cigarettes or can afford them, considering how much they're taxed. The Second Amendment people, the First Amendment people, would never allow the curtailing of their speech by government. Why in the hell would Second Amendment advocates allow the curtailing of their rights by the government? You see that they just want, look, we just want to get rid of these so-called assault rifles, semi-automatic weapons. We don't need them. Well, semi-automatic weapons is everything except for basically a musket and bolt action rifle, which, by the way, was used to assassinate Kennedy. So they'll be coming after that sooner or later anyway, as soon as Oliver Stone makes another movie. But once they get rid of those, once the people accept the concept that, well, we can get rid of this. We can get rid of this thing. Don't just this thing. That's it. No further. This is all we want. Then you go a little bit further and further and further, and they keep chipping away, and they will get to handguns. They will get to confiscation. That's how the left works. They never come right out and say, we want to ban all guns. Occasionally one of them does. They want to ban this type of gun, and then it'll be the next type of gun, and then it will be the next type of gun. They've called for the banning of the AR-15 after shootings that didn't involve the AR-15. They don't let the truth stand in their way. They have an agenda. So, no, don't give an inch. Never give an inch, because you're never, under any circumstances, going to get that inch back. That is the way the left works. If you get rid of, you know, if they institute Medicare for all, something like that, and they get rid of private health insurance, it can't function. The government is doing all of it. How can you compete with the government? You can't compete with the government, especially when the government essentially says you have to be in this system and you can't be in that system. So private health insurance companies will go out of business. They will cease to exist. Now, when the government system collapses because it is too expensive, or people start getting astronomical wait times and dying while waiting to see a specialist to get treatment for their disease, where else can they go? They can't go anywhere. The private health insurance industry will not be able to reconstitute itself. It doesn't exist anymore. To restart it, to start up a new one, would take an incredible amount of time. You'd have to get doctors on board. You'd have to get hospitals on board. You'd have to set up all. It would take forever to get what we've had for 70 plus years, 80 plus years since World War II. To put that back in place. Government knows that. You have no choice. You become beholden to the government for your health care. And when government is providing it, there is no plan B. You just shut up and you do what you're told. Meanwhile, of course, the government elites will be able to cut the lines. They will be able to fly anywhere in the world to get anything they want. They'll find a way. They always do. You and me, we get screwed. Just like they're trying to do with our Second Amendment. They'll screw us. They will take it one piece at a time like it's a Johnny Cash song. That's why you can't let them have so much as the cigarette lighter. Once you accept the concept that the government can start banning things that are perfectly constitutional, there is no stopping them. Don't ever, ever believe otherwise. All right, enough about Brooke Baldwin. Let's go to a different Brooke Baldwin show, because she was on fire in the last couple of days on CNN. They have an analyst over at CNN named Bob Baer in regards to this situation in New Zealand. Bob Baer is, I believe, a national security analyst. This was on Brooke Baldwin's show. What I'm about to play you is Bob Baer comparing Donald Trump to Hitler in the context of a discussion about New Zealand. How you get there, I don't know. I have two brain cells, therefore I am not liberal. And at the end, you'll hear serious journalist Brooke Baldwin not jump in and say, wait a second, what you just said is beyond the pale and absurd. Or, I'm sorry, Aaron Burnett. This one's Aaron Burnett. You won't hear serious journalist Aaron Burnett jump in and say, this is beyond the pale. This is absurd. This is an outrage, sir. And you cannot, I will not let that go unchallenged. No. You'll hear her say one simple thing. Thank you. After all this guy says, comparing the president to Nazis and lying about it. When you hear him make reference to animals, immigrants as animals, note this before you hear it. The president was referring to MS-13 gang members as animals. Unambiguously, without any doubt whatsoever, he said the sentence about MS-13 gang members, they're animals. And this Bear, Bob Bear, and Aaron Burnett either don't know, they're incredibly ignorant, and everybody at CNN is incredibly ignorant, which is entirely possible, or they are knowingly lying to their audience because it fits their political agenda. You can decide which.
He's appealing to his base. This is dog whistle politics, and it is racism, and you can't describe it any other way. When he called immigrants animals, it was the same as Adolf Hitler used to call foreigners animals, Jews and gypsies. It's the same politics. It's neo-Nazism, and he may not advocate violence, but for a lot of people that listen to him, as Juliet said, it's an incitement to violence.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you both very much. You just called the president of the United States Hitler. He's a neo-Nazi and he's advocating violence. Thank you very much for coming on. But don't worry, CNN isn't fake news. CNN isn't trying to incite anything. And again, if you really honestly truly believe that Donald Trump is Adolf Hitler, you almost have a moral obligation to act, to do something. Because he is history's greatest monster in the making and will be committing genocide at any moment. It is insane what goes on over there. All of this under the guise of the New Zealand shooting, which has nothing to do with anything in this country. And here is the cable news network telling you that we have to ban guns, one of their serious news anchors, and another one of their serious news anchors saying thank you very much to a guy who just said the president of the United States is like Hitler. He's a neo-Nazi. Blah, 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 blah. You can see why people hold CNN in such high regard. You can see why people despise the mainstream media. And you see why that feeling is absolutely 100% justified. It's sickening. It really is. And I say that as somebody who really used to love journalism. I used to love journalism, and now it is nothing more than activism with a press credential. It is throne sniffing to the highest degree, only of the left. They don't even seem to think that they're lying. These people at CNN and MSNBC seem to believe that they are actually telling the truth. You flip over to one of those networks. Try a challenge tomorrow. Flip over to CNN or MSNBC when you get a good 20 minutes that you can watch cable news and force yourself to watch it for 20 minutes, 20 uninterrupted minutes. Pay attention to it. Don't be checking Twitter. Don't be talking on the phone. Pay attention to it and tell me, email me, Derek@DailyCaller.com. If you think that that is Earth that they're talking about, or that is the United States that they're talking about. Because it sure as hell doesn't sound like it to me. And speaking of somebody who doesn't seem to live on planet Earth is Elizabeth Warren. She did a town hall last night, again on CNN. Jake Tapper was there to make sure that there were no serious questions and no real pressing on issues that real human beings care about. Instead, it was just a progressive fever dream. She held it. They held it. CNN scheduled it. Down in Jackson, Mississippi. Why? Because a rich white liberal from Massachusetts, why, that just screams Mississippi to you, doesn't it? She was inevitably asked about reparations. This woman's name is Gloria. She asks a long and rambling question that she screws up the ending of and then corrects herself. But I don't even want to try and paraphrase this garbage. I'll let her do it in her own words.
Thank you so much for taking my question. I am an African American female with five beautiful adult children and 10 grandchildren.
Oh, Georgia, count your blessings every day.
Please, please describe to me what a public apology to for 400 years of free labor.
Yeah.
In the South, especially Mississippi, will look like in the African American community in the new election.
All right. Thank you, Georgia.
In the new administration.
Thank you. So,
this sort of question is what the Democratic Party lives for. They've got people waiting for their reparations check. She's ready for it. Will I get my reparations check? I take issue with this 400-year-old person. 400 years of this, 400 years of that. Oh, if you got a problem with what happened in this country before 1789, take it up with Great Britain. We have been a country since 1789. We had slavery in the South, limited as it could possibly be, in order to form a country until 1865. That is, by my count, 76 years of slavery. You want to talk about 400 years? That's not even true. Anyway, it's so damn ridiculous, but it shows the depths of the brainwashing of so many people in this country. 400 years of oppression. Really? If this is a prison, there are no walls. There are airports everywhere. You're free to escape this hellhole anytime you want. A normal human being would, well, first of all, not seek the Democratic Party nomination. They would tell this person and anybody who talks about reparations that, look, we are not responsible for what happened from our ancestors. There are horrible, horrible things that went on. But if you're trying to win the Democratic Party's nomination, you have to pander to this. You have to take this very seriously. And Elizabeth Warren does just that.
America was founded on principles of liberty and freedom and on the backs of slave labor. This is a stain on America. And we're not going to fix that. We're not going to change that until we address it head on directly.
I could be wrong, I'm no historian, but I believe we did address it from the years 1861 to 1865. I thought, again, feel free to correct me on that. But we did address this as a country, Elizabeth Warren. The Democratic Party then set about to institute segregation and Jim Crow laws in the South, and the KKK they created to enforce their segregationist policies, which again, the Democratic Party is currently embracing under the guise of celebrating diversity somehow. It's one of the greatest con jobs since Kaiser Soze, to be perfectly honest with you. But the idea that we haven't dealt with slavery, are you kidding me? The liberals have used this as a weapon against any and everybody and to manipulate people since 1865. Nonstop. We've dealt with it. You're the ones who keep dredging it up because victimhood sells. But Elizabeth Warren was not done. She has to, I mean, she's got a large black, I don't know how the audience looked altogether. The shots of the crowd in this clip show a predominantly black audience down in Jackson, Mississippi. I don't know if that was the case altogether, but she knew who she was playing to, so she kept talking.
And make no mistake, it's not just the original founding. It's what's happened generation after generation. The impact of discrimination handed down from one to the next means that today in America, because of housing discrimination, because of employment discrimination, we live in a world where for the average white family has $100, the average black family has about $5.
I have no idea where that garbage statistic comes from. I couldn't find it anywhere. But I will say this, if this country is so horribly racist, if you actually look at income statistics based on ethnicity, Why our government keeps track of this crap, I'll never understand. It should not be done. But if you look at it based on ethnicity, this horribly racist country in which we live, that was founded by white supremacists on the backs of slaves, the ethnic groups with the highest incomes are Asians and Indians. Asians and Indians from India. Then it's white people. So again, if white people are horrible racists and this country is founded on racism and is horribly to its core racist country, it's really bad at it. It doesn't understand the concept of it. Because last I checked, Asians and Indians are not white. But somehow they've been lapped in the income scale. How would you explain that, Elizabeth Warren? You can't, of course. They don't want to, of course. Every ethnic group in the world has been discriminated against. Every ethnic group on the planet has been enslaved at one point or another, and has been the enslaver at one point or another. It's a little dirty secret they don't teach you in the history books. Over in Africa, they had slavery before Whitey came down from Europe. Whitey might have added international commerce to it, but slavery had a long and storied history in Africa. It was not created in Europe and brought over. It was created, far as I can tell, in ancient Egypt, where the Jews were enslaved, where the Jews ended up being, I would say, history's most oppressed ethnic group, and I say that as a non-Jew. Yet somehow they're doing okay. What was the difference? They didn't have a political party pandering to them. First off, oppressing them right after the end of slavery, the Democrats said about oppressing them. And when they could no longer oppress them, when the country would no longer tolerate that oppression, they then began to pander to them. And that hasn't worked out well either. But of course, Elizabeth Warren isn't going to point that out. No way, no how. That's not how Pocahontas rolls.
So I believe it's time to start the national, full-blown conversation about reparations in this country. And that means I support the bill in the House to appoint a congressional panel of experts, of people who are studying this, who talk about different ways we may be able to do it, and to make a report back to Congress so that we can, as a nation, do what's right and begin to heal. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, we can do what's right and begin to heal. She won't take a stand there. You notice that? It's a big cop-out. We need to have a commission. I support the idea of a commission coming in and telling us what's what and where to go and how to do it. She can't just say what she wants because she probably really doesn't want anything. Part of her has to recognize this is garbage. It just has to. She's an educated woman. She's a liar, but she's educated. She has to recognize this is crap. So we need to appoint a commission to start the healing process, to do this, to do that, and do the other thing. That will do no good whatsoever. All you're doing is telling people, wait around, we'll take care of you. What this really means is what she really wants. If anything would come out of this stupid commission, if they actually created it, I guarantee you it would not be money. Jake Tapper asks her about this in a second. But it will be more government spending. It will be investments in the black community. There have been trillions of dollars of investment in the black community. The government comes in and dictates every term and condition and runs those communities into the ground. Detroit, Baltimore, Chicago, you name the city, and it has been run into the ground. When the government comes in to help, everything goes to hell. But the answer, of course, as I said earlier in the show, is never to pull back and say, you know what, maybe we should get out of the way and let people make their own way, make their own decisions, and encourage them along that path. No, it is we need more government, more spending. They are using the concept of reparations as a ploy, as they do with everything, as they did with the shooting in New Zealand, as they do with every shooting in this country, as a ploy to advance their own agenda. It's a prop. Human beings are disposable. They don't care. They can be manipulated like pawns on a chessboard. They want more government spending, more government power. So if they can say we're doing this under the guise of justice and to try and bring about reparations for slavery, here's more government. How is that a payment? That seems more like prison to me. Jake Tapper kind of tries to corner her on the concept of cutting checks, though.
Senator, if I could just follow up on, George's question. You've said you're open to a conversation about reparations to the descendants of slaves and also to Native Americans, you also said. Might that include direct payments, direct financial transfer of money?
If they try to do this, this would be hilarious. Every human being in the country would run and get a 23andMe test or an ancestry test to try and find out, how much of a check can I qualify for? Because the concept of this is absurd on its face. It should just be dismissed. Most of the country, most of the people who live in this country had their families enter this country long after slavery. My family didn't come in until the 1890s. So long after slavery, they always lived in the North. They never benefited from even the Democrat segregation. So we lived in crappy neighborhoods in Michigan. What do we owe? Well, what if it turns out that our ancestors that came over here and they mated with people who were here? What if there's some African in us? Do we get a check? Do we have to cut ourselves a check? Is there a sliding scale? This should be dismissed out of hand for the stupidity that it is. But Elizabeth Warren is trying to win the Democratic Party's nomination. She can't just dismiss this out of hand. So she goes on about this.
So there are a lot of ways to think about how reparations should be formed. And I notice Georgia's question actually started with just the frame of an apology. Right? With the frame of a national recognition.
Oh, just national recognition. That's right. No, I think Georgia was looking to get a check. But I'm sure she'd be perfectly happy with an official government apology to her for something she didn't go through from somebody who didn't put her through it. Really? You really think that's the way it's going to go? The Democrats have so conditioned people that there's no way in hell that's going to be enough. Official apology. How about, you know, the fact that we fought a civil war and more people died in the civil war than any other war that we've had? How about the fact that 2% of the population died during the civil war? Isn't that enough? Isn't it? How about living in the greatest, freest country on the face of the earth and having the opportunity to make whatever you possibly can out of your life with the only restrictions on you being you? Is that not enough? No, it's not enough, because this country is evil and the root of all evil. So Elizabeth Warren then goes back to the dodge of, I want this commission to tell us what to do.
We have a lot of experts around the country, a lot of activists who have a whole lot of different approaches to it. And I think the best we can do right now, I love the idea of this congressional commission. Let's bring people together and let's open that conversation as Americans. Let's see what ideas people want to put on the table and let's talk them through. Because I got to tell you, ignoring the problem is not working.
Yeah, ignoring the problem. Nobody talks about race in this country. Nobody talks about anything. It's all Democrats talk about. Everything is race. The problem is when you try to engage them in a serious conversation about race, about 3.5 seconds into it, they're calling you a racist and storming off because they don't actually want to have a serious discussion about race. Because a serious discussion about race would have to involve the damage that they have done in tearing apart the black community. It would just have to. The role that government and big government and liberals played in destroying the black family. You'd have to discuss that, and they don't want to discuss that because that's the key to their power. Until they get their claws fully into the Hispanic community, then they'll ignore the black community, the black vote. It won't matter to them anymore. Until that happens, until they're comfortable with that grip, they have to string people along. They have to keep up the lie. They have to keep up the facade. So I want the commission to decide what's... Yeah, could you imagine experts, in quotes, and activists? What do you think they're going to advocate for? God help us all if this idea gets any traction whatsoever. And finally today, let's talk about another stupid Democrat who's running for president. I can't believe we're already this far into the show, but I just wanted to play this clip of Cory Booker and Chris Matthews slobbering all over one another about the Supreme Court. The other day we had Beto going on about maybe we need to put 15 people on the Supreme Court. Maybe we need to put seven Democrats and seven Republicans, or no, it was five Democrats and five Republicans. And then those 10 justices get to nominate five other people. It was an incredibly stupid idea. He was spitballing because that's what rattles around between his ears. It's not earwax in there. It's the spitballs trying to get out. Well, Cory Booker said, "Hold my beer," when someone told him that nobody could out stupid Beto O'Rourke when it comes to the Supreme Court. And here is his shot at glory.
Eric Holder, the former AG, is talking about expanding the number of people in the United States Supreme Court beyond nine to get more progressives on there. Where are you on that?
I think we need to fix the Supreme Court. I think they stole the Supreme Court seat.
Can we keep it at nine? Should we keep it at nine?
I think I would like to start exploring a lot of options, and we should have a national conversation. Term limits for Supreme Court justices might be one thing, to give every president the ability to choose three. Okay. We have people holding on to those seats in ways that I don't think is necessarily healthy. So I want to figure
out... Age limit?
I think we term limits might be a better way of saying that.
This just cracks me up. The casual nature of the conversation between two grown men, one of whom supposedly a journalist, the other one wants to be president of the United States, about packing the Supreme Court, changing dramatically the Supreme Court. There's a conversation going on around the country about Democrats wanting to get rid of the Electoral College. Make it just straight up the popular vote where you can just, you know, campaign in New York and California and say F the rest of the country. Pack the Supreme Court, get rid of the Electoral College. This is what democracy looks like, this party. They lost. And they want to change the rules to try and rig it so they never lose again. These are dangerous, dangerous times, ladies and gentlemen, and Democrats are dangerous, dangerous people. God forbid they ever get their hands back on the levers of power. You need to have an escape plan. You really do. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Email me, Derek, at dailycaller.com with comments, compliments, complaints, whatever you got. Thank you for listening. Please tell a friend, and we'll see you tomorrow.
When he called immigrants animals, it was the same as Adolf Hitler.